This week we have just a great, funny stand-up comedian. He's been on I'm a Celebrity, loads of other TV shows, one of the best live comics in the country. This is Sean Walsh's Wonderbook. So I'm here with the fantastic Sean Walsh. How are you, mate?
I'm very good.
Good.
Thank you.
You look suitably dishevelled.
Yes, yes, that's me.
Do you ever look like you've had a proper wash? Because I don't think I've ever seen you, like, because you're a very handsome man, but you always look like you've bathed in a puddle. You've kind of got that. Do you know what I mean?
I can't be bothered. I don't, yeah. Like, so this happened in lockdown, really, but I putting on jeans to me now is like putting on a tuxedo. I can't believe... Are you wearing, like...
I've got some jeans.
Actual
yeah.
jeans.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, look, joggers.
Yeah, I saw that.
I can't...
That. Yeah.
Because I think you'll agree, for those just listening, basically, my dress sense is someone that's had to put clothes on to get something out of the car.
Yes.
That's the look I carry, I think. Yeah. And I'm fine with that. I just
put
can't...
the bins out chic.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's it. And I just... well done for, you know, looking well and looking bright and looking fresh, but I can't... For what? I don't know what people are doing. Well done.
Yeah, well, I managed to get... See, I've got a lot of stains on my clothes, and I've got no problem with that. My wife gets very
upset. Probably be in fashion at some point.
This is stains, what I'm thinking. Yeah, yeah,
beans
yeah.
Beans down the jeans. Yeah. In East London, they've got beans, they've got ramen stains. It'll probably be
yeah,
trendy.
Yeah, a ramen stain jean will definitely be a thing, eh? I've recently got into ramen. I had it in... Yeah. Where did I
Welcome.
Have it?
Welcome. I've recently got into ramen.
No, I had it in...
The egg in the middle.
I don't like the egg. It just, what's the...
It's the whole point of the ramen, isn't it?
Yeah, but it... Yeah, I leave that.
Okay.
Am I doing it wrong?
You're just... Yes, you are. You're okay. Just noodles.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I'm into super noodles. Is that what it is? Okay.
Exactly. Welcome. Yes. I'm quite... do you know what? I'm quite... not nervous, but I realise this show is... It's actually a lot more... You're a lot more vulnerable when you're talking about some stuff that you like. Because when I'm doing my act, it's the go-to is what is, you know, problematic for me in the world, and what is stopping me from just getting through the day. The day is impossible. This is a thing that I've got to try and get through, and it's very difficult. How are we going to do it?
So what we're going to learn is, if you've got through the day,
yes.
These are the things that you're looking forward to once the day has been finished.
Precisely.
So what is the first thing?
Well, I think... Because I don't enjoy, I don't know if you know this, but I don't enjoy many things.
Okay.
In life. I envy people that enjoy things.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's when you watch somebody that kind of, like, my wife's a doctor and she can sit and watch, like, there's a show at the minute where Stacey Solomon is giving people life advice. And she's, yeah, and that just seems like a real misnomer. But she is happy as a pig in shit, my wife, watching this
yes.
lovely woman help really broken people.
It's called Sort Your Life Out.
Sort Your Life Out with Stacey Solomon.
It's extraordinary. Pretty aggressive title.
I just can't, look, I've met Stacey, she's lovely, but I can't imagine being in a low ebb and gone, I need Stacey Solomon. She's the only person that can get me out of this pit of despair.
You know
that
What's bit in, wrong with the people?
But you know that bit in Batman when they're trying to, when Bane's trying to climb out? It's like having
yes.
Stacey Solomon go, oh, do you want to just give us your hand? I'll leave you. You know, she doesn't, like, how bad is your life if Stacey Solomon's your go-to?
Well, what sort of condition are these people in?
Mostly it's like they need their garage sorting. But I think if you've killed a man and you kind of like, and you're like, Stacey, I need an alibi. I don't think she comes in.
Okay. Oh,
she might
she
come in like the
me.
Wolf from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
Just putting like lime over. Get rid of the body. You weren't here. All right. Let's go. So you don't like stuff.
Well, I don't. Yeah. And I don't get excited. Excited for things, really.
Really?
I don't have that part of the human, I don't know, condition that is excitement. I don't, you know, like a holiday.
Yeah.
I'm always, there's no I don't experience excitement. I can enjoy it once I am there.
Yes. That's,
I get there, and it's kind of once probably the hotel doors shut, I could go, right, we can relax and I can enjoy this. But going, the problem is going.
Yes.
Going anywhere, that's not fun. So I can't get past the going on holiday. I'm like, yeah, but we've got to go. We're still going.
Gotcha.
And I find that very difficult.
So you need a sort of, you know, they used to do with Mr. T, where they'd give him like a drugged egg mayonnaise sandwich.
We all need that.
So you need, we need, you know, egg mayonnaise that sandwich, you're drugged, and then you wake up in Barbados.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
That would be a travel show.
You're like Stacey Solomon. You've got all the answers. This is amazing.
Yeah. I quite like the... I remember a friend of mine, Daniel, had brilliant advice. His advice was always have two things you're looking forward to.
Because in life?
Generally? Yeah. So you always have... Otherwise, you have too much pressure on the one thing. So it's like, okay, I've got the holiday. But if you've got the holiday and then a gig that you're looking forward to, or you've got a... you know, a dinner with mates, or you're doing a thing with your daughter, or whatever it may
be.
I think if you have enough of those little nuggets,
all right.
Otherwise, you're putting too much pressure on the holiday.
Thank you.
That's all
right. I think I'm going to leave this a happier person. This is good. This is really good advice.
But you, so you say you don't experience happy. What about when you're doing a gig and it's going really well?
See, this is what
you're
I don't
in snooker
understand.
Brain. Snooker brain. Yeah.
I don't understand. The only bit for me that is really the fun bit where I can relax and breathe is when at the end and it's finished and I know that it's been to my standard, that they've definitely enjoyed it. And then I could go, oh, that was.
Yeah, okay.
Retrospectively, maybe that was okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But up there, it's just, we've got to keep making them laugh. You can't drop this.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's like when you watch Ronnie O'Sullivan play snooker, you don't see him like looking at the camera going, fuck, I'm good at this. Where's this going?
Exactly. That's it.
Precisely. In the hole. But he's obviously good enough.
He could probably sing songs
as he put it in. There goes the black and the yellows over there.
There was what I was doing a new material at the Backyard Comedy Club not too long ago, and there was a lovely American gentleman was on, and before I was about to go on, he said to me, which bit are you looking forward to doing the most? What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to any of this. This is fucking torture, mate. This is self-harm. I'm terrified of going on. I'm terrified they're not going to laugh. I'm terrified of this whole experience. I've never looked forward to being on stage.
And he's like, I've got a bit about onions. I was just trying to make small talk. I'm new to this country. Poor guy. So he's basically just wandered out, and the backstage of the Backyard is tiny.
Yes.
It's this beautiful little kind of like, you know, cordoned off area. And he's like, what bit are you looking forward to? And you've just unloaded.
I said you're insane. You're insane.
Fucking great.
Yeah. Anyway,
have you gigged in America at comedy clubs?
I have a little bit.
It's so funny because the backstage in America in New York clubs is just this, elbows out, and everyone's like, what are you doing?
British clubs. Very comfortable within themselves.
Well, very comfortable as well. Everyone says this guy's been on such and such. It's just that. I mean, it's much spoken about, but it's so funny whenever you see an American comic go on stage and say that he's, you know, been married for 20 years, and there is that applause. And it's just so funny to us because, you know, if you were chatting about that in the UK, I've been married for 20 years. Have you?
And
have you got any stories about how much you hate each other?
Come
here for joy.
Yes. Yeah, no, exactly. But I've gone deep within myself to find some things that I do that bring me happiness. I've realised...
What's the first thing?
Well, okay, the first thing, it has to be the cinema.
Yes.
I know it's kind of... That sounds quite boring, the cinema. Of the stuff that we can do nowadays.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid I grew up in Brighton, and the cinema, there was the ABC cinema. It was £2.50. And my mum would give me that £2.50 and I would go to the cinema alone. And oh my God, I had excitement then.
Mm.
Like, it just to go and watch these, and I loved every film.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Do you remember having that with comedy? Like, it didn't matter who the comedian was, I just loved everyone. That's what I had with film.
What was the film, can you remember the first time you went to the cinema and feeling that sort of warm glow?
I think one of the first, I saw Ghostbusters, because Ghostbusters is the new Ghostbusters is coming out. I saw Ghostbusters 2 when it was out in the cinema in 1989. I was 4.
Oh, wow.
And my mum took me to see that.
And you, do you have vivid memories or just bits? I remember going to watch Return of the Jedi with my dad. And it,
1984?
It was, but yeah.
Three?
I think we'll find out the date it was, but my main memory of it, I think it was re-released because I was slightly older, is when they're... The Ewoks are playing the bongos on the heads of the...
Yes.
What are they called?
Their victims.
Not the victims. What are they called? Stormtroopers.
Yes. You know, when they've won.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When they've won, that's a joyous scene.
And I just remember thinking, like, age 7, that's a fantastic way to celebrate victory.
Yeah.
But it's so yes. dark that these little tiny bears
yes.
ripped their heads off and went, let's turn them into a musical instrument. Yes. Do you know what I mean? When you think about it, but age 7, I was like, that's what you should do.
That's
do you know
fantastic.
What I mean? Turn their cock into a flute. Do you reckon that's like a scene that never made it? And they're just like,
yes.
The
director's cuts.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great idea.
Just turn their fucking lungs into a violin. You're like, it's a bit much.
I saw Liar Liar 8 times.
Well, I remember speaking to you about, because Jim Carrey had a huge impact on you.
Yes.
And just
huge.
That you...
I think he changed the course of my life.
Yeah.
That's mad, isn't it? There's one... Did you have that? Like, I saw Ace Ventura, too young probably, when it was kind of, when it first came out on VHS.
And that's a scary film to try and reenact, because you got to then leap in a cow.
My day, yes.
Try and get your way out.
My family, I went to Ireland to visit my family recently, and they reminded me that I horrified my nan at a very young age when I bent over.
Oh, you did
to
that.
My nan. I bent over, I ripped open, I was wearing trousers, but I ripped apart my butt cheeks and to my nan said, a sola mia. And she, do you know what? She didn't get the reference.
No.
Didn't know the reference.
Is he on medication, your boy? Or it's nice to see you too, Sean.
Exactly. But yeah, huge impact on my life. And that's what, you know, when you're a kid and you can dream, like I would just... The idea of being a movie star.
Yeah, is because
that's fucking amazing.
Do you still sort of have aspirations to do acting?
Yeah, I do. I do a bit of acting. Yeah. I'm going to do more acting. I'm going to play Malvolio in The Twelfth Night.
Are you?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
bit of Shakespeare. I'm looking forward to that. But no, that it was when you're a kid, you imagine yourselves, or I did anyway, like in the action scene.
Yes.
Tom Cruise jumping from carriage to carriage. Like yeah. that. So it's kind of. It's not necessarily an adult aspiration anymore, but when you're a kid,
yeah.
you know.
Do you still get that, like, as an adult, that feeling of going to the cinema on your own?
So,
because a lot of people don't understand, a lot of comedians, you know, spend a lot of time in, you know, towns and cities where we're not from. So you just end up going to the cinema on your own.
Well, I don't, as you know, I don't drink anymore. And I used, when I drank, and I drank a lot, I basically spent... All of my 20s hungover. Just it was either hungover or drunk. And when I was hungover, I would go to the cinema. And I would say, yeah, can I, have, I just needed somewhere to sleep. You're in a town, you don't have a hotel. And I'd go to the cinema and go, yeah, can I have a ticket, please, for the film? And they'd be like, and which one? It doesn't matter. Just I need to just get in the screen. And I would go and sleep in cinemas hungover. But I love the whole ritual of the cinema.
Okay, like, so what's your... Do you
so
have
a
snack of choice?
Right, okay, well, listen. I've gone from kid, you know, outskirts of Brighton, going to £2.50 ABC, and you go to multiplex cinemas to see the big blockbusters.
Sure.
And as you get a bit older,
yeah.
right...
I know where we're heading.
Yeah.
And what a place.
Exactly.
Say those words.
Well, I'm going to say, you're thinking Everyman.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, okay. I think I can trump Everyman.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Electric Cinema Notting Hill. So for people that don't know this, I mean, it's like paradise for me. Blanket in a box. Are we kidding?
Yeah.
Blanket, you sit down, you've got an armchair, little table next to the seat, there's a lamp, a little lamp, so you can see your little brownie, your cup of tea next to you. There are beds in the front. That's a bit too much for me.
The beds, full beds.
Full beds. You can sit, lie in bed. at the front of the set. I know exactly. Wow. And yeah, and then in front of you is a footstool inside a blanket. I mean, this is just paradise.
Have you ever done gold class in Australia?
No.
So I think it's a similar thing. It's like a full-size cinema and they get like 12 seats and they all recline.
Oh.
And you have people that give you, you can get like a fillet steak and you can say when you want it. So I'll have it.
What?
I'll have it 39 minutes into the film. And then these sort of very quiet whispering Aussies go, your steak's ready. Did you want it medium or?
Oh,
and they just
wow.
pop it next to you. And you can watch it. I watched 300, which is a terrible film, but kind of reclined eating a steak. Phenomenal.
That would be so good.
Watching a good film in a good cinema, it's tough to beat as an experience.
The best, I would say, to this day...
Best film, best cinema.
The best, it's not necessarily the best film, but the film where I left,
yep.
and the whole audience was silenced by its brilliance. It
yeah.
was a moment.
Yeah.
And it won't surprise you, it was The Dark Knight.
Right.
Right. The Dark Knight is now...
Presumably because you're like, fuck, we made it out of there.
Yeah. yeah. But I saw that in IMAX. It was shot on IMAX. So what that means is just like highest definition. The opening shot of The Dark Knight is a helicopter shot zooming in on a big tower building, right? So it just starts, it's the Batman logo. The Batman logo vanishes. The camera's flying into this building, and then, bang, this it's like spear smashes out of the glass window. The IMAX noise, it's like that. The camera, then, we cut to inside the building with the clown about to shoot out the window. The camera goes out, then pans out, go like a whip pan. The whole of the IMAX audience, everyone went... Like that. It was like being in America.
Yeah.
Like you were actually moved by what you were seeing on screen because no one had seen a film in that definition before.
Mm.
So when the camera whips back, it was like, oh my God, you felt like you were that high in the sky. It was absolutely incredible. Heath Ledger comes out.
Yeah.
And I would practice. See, this is what I do. I'm mad. See, this is what happens. That's right, 2004. And I would practice like Heath Ledger Joker. I remember being on a train and thinking, I better practice it quietly.
Yeah.
You might look mad.
Yeah.
That's insane.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's that thing. I know exactly what I mean. It's like when you hear somebody with a different accent as a kid,
yes.
you would just kind of go, oh, well, I'll try Scouse. I'll try Geordie.
I do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I still do that. If someone walks past and their accent kind of, I don't know, tunes in with me, so I'll start repeating what they...
Definitely. Like, whenever I'm in Belfast, like, it's the one, Northern Ireland is the one I still quite get, I can't get a handle on it. It's the...
I have no idea.
But it's like, I can do my name hard. Are you hard? And then, and it's my favourite...
I'm not, by the way.
No. But my favourite for that sort of comedy brain, I like going to Dublin, and I like going to a sushi restaurant, and I like listening to people order their starter specifically, because it sounds like... the waiter has asked them for the favourite member of their family and they've gone, to mammy. And it's but as soon as that little silly... Like,
that's amazing.
But that is always in my head. To mammy is always... But that silly joke is... So I'm,
that's
I'm,
brilliant.
But you know when your brain is not there, that
yes,
probably happens to you
well.
Loads. But I think that's what happens to most comedians. You're just there sort of like trying to... I don't know, like find the end of this weird, pointless quest of like, oh, that sounds like a quiz has been done, doesn't it? And this is all going on in your head. And
yes.
your friend's just eating sushi and like, he probably had a quiz. And then you come back to.
I had an obsession with mimicking. The strange thing is people assume I can do, because I can do impressions, people assume I can do accents and I can't. I can just kind of get the essence of specific person.
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand that. It's strange.
Do you know my favourite thing in the cinema? I love this. It's when the trailers come out at the beginning.
Oh.
And it, particularly in an English cinema, it's the noises people make after each trailer. So it's like, in a world, and with one chance, will he, will, won't he?
Yes.
And then just as it finishes, just hearing people go, that's right, eh? It's that little mutter.
Yes.
And the best one is like, well, that fucking weird. I love that. That mutter. They've put millions into the trailer.
Yes.
And you can just hear muttering men and women go, oh, what a bag of wank. Fucking watch that. what a bag of wank that is. And like, Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise in Tom Cruise the movie. Fucking hell, is he leaping off a cliff again? So that's the cinema,
yes,
which I loved, and you put it forward very passionately. What's next?
Good. I would say maybe another building, the Top Secret Comedy Club, you know.
I do know it very well, yeah.
It's...
do you know, I had a moment the other day, because backstage is so awful.
There is no backstage, well, this is it. For a start.
But I was considering... Like, that's what I love. Like, every time I start a new tour, it ends up in that kind of NCP car park.
Yeah.
Stinks of piss. There's kind of rats there.
Yes, exactly.
And I was thinking, I should build a toilet back here.
Please.
So that...
Could we use it?
Yeah, of course. Yes, of course.
Thank you. Thank you, Russell.
It's just
Russell's toilet. Please.
Can you imagine that? Oh, God. Talk about having a bad reputation. Okay. Imagine that within comedy. Oh, that's my bog. No, I would, if I could give anything back to the world of comedy, I'd like to put a toilet backstage in Top Secret.
Oh my God.
Because I'm getting fed up of pissing into like cups and then throwing it down and adding to the problem.
Yes.
And I'm scared that there's CCTV backstage, so I'm like pissing in the corner like the Blair Witch.
The flies.
It's awful.
So many flies.
And you can hear your name being called and
you don't want to be having, you don't want to be using the toilet with the audience. It's not because, it's not a status thing. It's like, this is weird, you're about to see me on stage.
Yes, absolutely.
And standing next to you on a urinal. We've both got our penises out of our trousers.
What I would say, we're not selling this. It's a phenomenal comedy club.
Yes, this is meant to be a good thing.
And that is, but that's, so what is it about the Top Secret Comedy Club?
Do you know what, right?
Because I'm totally with you. I think it's the best, it's definitely the best comedy club in London.
But it's
always full.
Always full. Two rooms. We haven't mentioned two rooms. Oh. So you go. It used to be the other way around.
And it should still be the other way around.
It was better. And I keep telling Mark.
Yes.
It's so annoying. But basically, you go and play in one room downstairs. It's incredible room. It's like how you imagine like comedy would feel.
Yeah.
And then you come off. And then you have to go straight upstairs. So when you're doing new stuff, like you often are, you know, you get to make those tweaks just going up a staircase.
Yeah.
It was so much better when it was down a staircase. Because basically, you used to do the set upstairs, it would go however it went, and then you would do the tweaks as you went downstairs, and then had the gig like that you wanted.
Yeah.
Now, you have the gig that you want, go upstairs and have a very underwhelming time.
Yes. Yeah. And it should be the other way around, don't
it? Yes, it should be the other way around. But I think...
But it's still great. The thing is, it's also that thing of... The very fact that you can just go there, and if you're doing, let's say you're doing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you can do six versions of this embryonic idea.
Totally.
By the Wednesday, it's got there.
Yeah.
It's more than a kernel.
Yes. Well, I've seen you work, and it's unbelievable. You know how quickly you can do that. For me, one of the things that I love is. Because what we do involves so much travelling, right? And
yes.
There's something. There's kind of, you know, people often say, "God, that must be lonely," and it's you know, it's not lonely in a sad way, but it is isolating.
Yeah.
When I kind of realised, shit, this is like playing home. This club is my home, and in my head, I call it. It's like home.
Yes.
I know all the staff.
Yeah.
I feel like Ray Liotta and Goodfellas.
Yeah.
I go in and they really looked after me when. You know, I don't know if you know. Do you know I was on a show called Strictly Come Dancing?
I've heard, yeah.
And, it went okay.
Yeah. So presumably, whenever you dance, it's traumatic.
I do not dance.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's, do you know what it is?
Hey, come on, let's go for a boogie. Fuck!
No.
Murder on the dance floor.
Well, do you know what it is more, actually, is when you turn up to any car park or something and it says Strictly No Parking.
Yeah.
And I still just go, every time I see, I can hear the word, like a dog hearing something. You know, Miles, I could just hear the word Strictly. I still go, uh-huh.
Yeah.
But through that time, which was very difficult, that club was there for me.
Yes.
Mark was there for me.
Yeah.
It was the only place where I could go and feel safe a bit much, but just comforted. And I felt liked in a time where... And it felt like an entire country.
Yeah.
Obviously, that wasn't the reality, but it felt like an entire country.
what were those gigs like? Because I know what you mean. I remember you being front page news.
Yes.
So presumably you have that moment where you're like, can I ever be liked again?
Totally.
So to go to a, and the thing about Top Secret, it isn't like a, you know, small club that downstairs is like 200 people.
Yeah.
They feel very indicative of society. So for
yes,
you,
that's very true.
That must feel like that first gig. What was that first gig like? That must have been.
I don't remember that. Do you know what?
Fucking terrifying.
I don't remember the first gig, but I do remember I went back too soon. That's for sure.
Right.
I don't think you've got to kind of let audiences or the public, whatever you want to call it, you've got to kind of almost let them get over it. But I wanted to kind of fight it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want this thing that was happening to my life to take away the only thing that I kind of had.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went back too soon, and I wouldn't have been, I would have looked unwell. I was extremely thin and gaunt. I would have looked quite strange. But also my act, if you know, I think you know my act, it's very loud and it can sometimes be slightly, it can be slightly boisterous sometimes, which I think is mistaken for arrogance. Certainly when I was younger, when you're young and loud, that just looks like confidence.
Yes.
Of course it's not. I never make that mistake with younger acts when people go, oh, he's confident. Yeah, he's not, he's young.
Yeah.
It's very different.
Yeah.
I was never confident.
Bluster.
Yeah, yeah. But I went up and it was so difficult. The audiences didn't know how to feel.
Mm.
And so they would get up, they would leave. Sometimes
really?
they would tell me that they were appalled by me. All this horrible stuff. And I would have to walk off.
But that's not heckled to your material either.
Not at all, no.
But so that's presumably a harder thing to deal with.
Yes,
because
it was.
It's like, oh shit, that's how they feel about me.
Yes.
Which is a testament to the fact that you sort of pushed through that. And I don't know, this is not the easiest thing for you to hear. Did it make your comedy better? Maybe it did.
Well, of course.
Which is a shitty thing.
It did.
Yeah, yeah.
It definitely did, because it made my life better.
Right.
In the long run, I mean, I don't know. There's a philosophical question there of, you know, would you put yourself through that to come out the other side and be the person that you are? You know, you can't answer that. But
yeah.
But my point was, is that Mark stayed with me throughout all of that.
Yeah.
And he carried on booking me. And he could have seen those audience members reacting to me the way they did.
Yeah.
And he could have said, look, this isn't working.
Yes.
And he didn't.
Yeah.
And one instance I remember where he took someone's phone and he deleted the video
that
they had filmed of me having a tough time in this strange, very surreal situation.
But even
I'll never forget that.
But the care that a comedy club owner takes over a comedian in that instance is remarkable. Like,
I would say especially Mark, by the way.
Yeah, but
Russell, sorry, Mark, I think this is really important. I said this about Mark to someone the other day, and it really means a lot. Is Mark will watch you, right? He'll watch whoever's on from the side. This is the guy, he's seen it all. He works pretty much every night.
Yeah.
The guy's insane.
Yeah.
And he will enjoy your set as much as the crowd every time.
Yeah.
He loves comedy and he loves us.
Yes.
And at that time in my life, I needed that. I just needed someone. I needed like some sort of sense that, is there anyone on my side in this? That club represents that for me.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that they were through me from before that, through that, after that.
Mm.
They've been there for the whole
time. It's the greatest.
I appreciate that.
Top Secret is a phenomenal entry into the Wonder Box.
Yes.
What's next?
I'm going to go in my favourite band.
Okay.
Blink 182.
Right.
Do you know Blink 182?
What I know of them is...
You're going to do an impression?
Yeah. it's that kind of college rock. You know.
That's the one.
It just sounds like a...
Where are you?
Yeah, it's that kind of weird... My brother loves that era.
Yeah.
But it's where, you know...
Pop punk.
Didn't have...
Where are you?
Yeah.
Does that mean anything to you?
It just hurts. So, but that's what you like. You like listening to that.
When I was a teen, yeah.
I was just saying, like.
Yeah, no, it does confuse people.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
So when I was a teenager, so this is American Pie came out 2000.
Right, again, cinema.
Yeah, and it was a coming of age film. Like it, I never seen anything like it.
Yeah,
there was a movie. That they'd made where the characters from the film are talking about. They're talking about masturbating.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
Don't tell anyone, but that's what I also do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've not told anyone about that.
Yeah.
And now there's a film where they're talking about it. Oh, my God, I'm not the only one that does it.
Mm.
It was like the Bible.
Mm.
American Pie was like the Bible to me. Then I was like 15. It was like I couldn't believe that, and it was so okay. My name Seann.
Yes,
that N is obviously not on my passport. That's my stage name, but that actually I didn't put the N there for comedy. It was there before because Stifler.
Yes.
In American Pie is played by Sean William Scott, and he's got two N's.
Wow.
The reason
wow.
that N is there is because of Stifler.
Wow.
No, it's terrible. Such a bad collection of heroes in my life. Influence, terrible influences.
No, I don't know.
But so anyway, so Jim is running. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
It was of its time.
Yep.
Jim is running through the front gardens. He's garden skipping to get back to his bedroom because Nadia is naked.
Yes.
And he's running.
Yeah.
And he's running to a song called Mutt by Blink-182.
Yes.
It's a lovely bit of scoring to this scene. And, like, I just loved this song. I was like, what is this song? And I went and bought the soundtrack
from
buying soundtracks.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, but the soundtrack to American Pie, Mutt was on it. Mutt was by Blink-182.
And presumably for you, Mutt was sort of like a masturbatory rev-up.
Yes!
So if you were listening to that, you
definitely.
Were like, you would get yourself in the mood. How does it go? What's the...
He pauses shaming, and he tells himself that he is the Fonz.
Yeah.
But it's the... Do you know what it is? Is it really, and by the way, like, I've got tattooed Blink. That's a Blink tattoo. That's a Blink tattoo, if you can see that. Like, I know it's sad, but if you have a favourite band like I do, they're like, this is so sad, but they're like your best friend.
Yeah.
Blink, are there, if something good has happened, Blink, I put on Blink. If something bad has happened, I'll put on this kind of Blink song that will help me through this time in my life. Does this make any sense to you?
No,
with
of
your
course
own
it does.
Music?
Yeah.
So it represented those youth in my life. They're looking, you kind of grow up, you do other things. And then somehow they just came back into my life and I saw them live at Reading. And
you'd just done a gig?
I'd done a gig.
So that must be great to kind of go...
the only thing I'd done. And
right.
I was there at Reading. And it was like seeing Tom, Mark and Travis.
Yeah.
It was just, oh my God. I think I still watch it. I watch Reading 2014 live on YouTube all of the time, just reliving. It was so... good.
What did you take when you were watching Blink 182?
What did I take?
Well, what is there a perfect drug to have?
I really like
the idea of like ayahuasca or like doing sort of like...
Oh, no. This is a thing you take it, then you cry into a bucket or something.
Yeah, you cry and shit out your demons. But I can't imagine you can watch Mariah Carey. But I imagine you could... I'm sort of seeing, is there a sort of substance that goes well with Blink
182? Classic Blink drug.
Yeah, yeah. What's your Blink?
I now
bit of weed.
I can do that free. I can do that.
Okay.
I can enjoy that sober. I flew to America. Basically, let me tell you. So Tom, which is the one with the voice.
Yeah.
Tom left Blink. Right? I know. It was like, it would be like if John or Paul had left the Beatles.
Of course it would, yeah.
Right? Exactly like that. And Matt Skiba came in from Alkaline Trio and that was good and they were doing a good job.
Sure.
But then coming towards the end of lockdown, it was announced that Tom was rejoining Blink. I'm getting lightheaded just mentioning that.
Of course.
It'd be like that if the Beatles got back together.
Right. Yeah.
So, but Tom had left Blink twice already. So me and my friend, who's also another like kind of Blink nut, we were like, if we don't, there were British tour dates in. We were like, if we don't see them at the beginning of this tour,
they might split up.
Tom might not make it to the end of the tour.
Yeah.
We've got to fly. And we flew to Washington.
Oh, wow.
To see them.
And it's pretty exciting watching a band that you love in a different country as well.
Oh my God. It was absolutely incredible.
So here's an interesting thing. Given that you said you didn't look forward to holidays, that moment when you were flying to watch Blink-182 in Washington, presumably every part of that is fun.
Okay. Yes, you're right. I have stated I don't experience excitement, but I will say that on that day in Washington, not the trip to Washington, no, because you still got to go there, no, awful, but that morning, man, it was like Christmas. I woke up, Blink t-shirt on, met my friend, we're all just singing Blink, jumping up and down. It's just, I know, it's crazy. I'm not embarrassed because I don't know what it is about, and I also love the thing that we don't get as comedians, because it's solo, but like, it's so ridiculous. If you're like, what, this band that sings songs about anal? Yeah, and other things, but like those three people, like with any band, of any band that you love, it's the combination of those three or four, however many people in the band, coming together to make that one piece.
Yes.
That I love that.
When are you watching Blink-182 want next?
Reading.
Oh, are you? You going again?
They're playing this Reading. I'm going. I will cry.
It's fun.
I cry. I will 100% I'll cry.
Presumably as well, you're the oldest person at Reading. Because that's what
I've been for about 10 years.
Because that's what I remember walking around the festival last time I did it with all these kind of young kids who got the Jack Grealish haircut and the bum bag on the diagonal, and me and my tour manager were in it, and we felt like defective sperm. Do you know what I mean? Like, we better not make the Eggman. It was fucking terrible. But it was so cool. I love doing Reading. I really enjoy it. The only downside about doing any kind of festival gig, and like you say, there's kind of like 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 people out there waiting, is just you know what it feels like to watch Blue Liquid try and move your poo away, because you've got these weird portaloos and you've got that nervous sort of pre-gig shit, and you're like so there's something so funny about the fact that everyone who's ever played a festival gig, Beyonce must have been in a portaloo before she goes on at Glastonbury going, God damn fucking, just do you know what I mean? Just pulling that thing of just trying to make it, just knocking the, it all shift down.
Or when you flush it and there's like an electric, electric flush that lets everyone know you've done a number two.
Nervous. Yeah, it really gives your game away, doesn't it?
I would say, just quickly before I give you something else to put in the Wonder Box, one of the best moments of my stand-up comedy career was doing the Hackney Empire last year at September. And just in terms of war com music, check it out. Violence by Blink-182.
Okay.
It's got the most incredible introduction. So Hackney Empire, what? Just over 1,000 people. It's incredibly... Chaplin's played there, which means a lot to me. You know, this is an incredibly... You know, this is an incredible building to play in, right? And then the lights go down and they hear this.
And then you, what does
burst
that...
out at that point? Yeah. Imagine that. I was stood at the side during that bit where it's kind of just the drums are playing, and they were screaming, you know, ready for me to come on. And I thought this is the best moment so far.
What's next?
Next, I'm gonna go for where I live.
Well, okay.
It's a bit strange. I know. I love where I live. I live in West London.
Oh, yeah. Whereabouts?
I live a kind of borderline Hammersmith Shepherd's Bush.
Okay, yeah.
Right, now...
Sort of like bottom territory.
But yes! Yes, exactly. Yeah. I passed that bench, that famous bench, on when I walked to the Thames. But I come from I don't know. It's like a modest background, outskirts of Brighton. And you know, I've been. I can say this now because I've been public about it. I've done shows, but like my dad was, you know, drug addict, and so it wasn't a very kind of, I don't know. No one has a normal upbringing, but I suppose you could say it was dark in places.
Yeah.
When you're, if you're, I think you can say this getting older and looking back. If your dad is a heroin addict, I think that probably, in terms of like the odds of you getting anywhere, I don't even know really what that means, but you know, anywhere in life, whatever that means. Mm. I was in the bottom sets for everything at school. You wouldn't put your money on me for like kind of doing anything, let's say exceptional, because like we've just said, standing on stage where Chaplin has been and all of these things. I've met Jim Carrey. Yeah. You know, I've fucking met Jim Carrey in Canada. That's the universe life. These are unbelievable things that when I'm having a tough time, I try and remember that.
Yeah.
And what we've done. It's crazy. And so where I live, it's almost like sometimes, it's probably quite embarrassing saying it like this, but it's like my bling in my head.
Yeah.
It's like I walk around Notting Hill and I'm like, this wasn't for me.
Yeah.
I'm not meant to be here.
Yeah.
And I get to walk around and the Electric Cinema, fucking blanket in a box. Me?
Yeah.
Blanket in a box, like a toffee popcorn. I've smashed it.
Yeah.
And I really cherish it. I'm not kidding. Every time I go to Portobello Road, so it's a bit of a walk for me to get to Portobello Road. But it's something I do. If I've got a day off, the first thing I do, I walk to Notting Hill and I walk around and I'm just saying this. I look around and I go, I can't believe I live here. I can't believe that this is kind of my area and that I know it. I know where to go. I know the people in the cafes. My local cafe, right? I love my local cafe. And like, my mum can't go in these cafes. You know these kind of like artisan cafes? My mum, she's not comfortable in there. She's like, no, I just want to go Costa. And my mum will go to the Costa in Tesco's.
Mm.
Fine, absolutely fine. But I've always enjoyed that thing. Instead of going like, oh no, I'm not going to Waitrose.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, because I'm not from that. Which I'm not. I'm like, are you fucking mad? I'm going to Waitrose. I'm like going, oh, look at that. Look, it's the, and whatever the Waitrose is, not the essentials. What's the up?
Their number one range.
Is that what it's called?
Is it? See, that's the thing. So like, I'm like number one range. That's like my bling. I'm like, fuck yeah, number one range. I fucking made it.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
You'd have been terrible on Supermarket Sweep. he's blown everything on a really expensive cauliflower.
And I've got no money left because I'm terrible with money. But the reason I moved to West London is because when my dad moved from Ireland to England, to London in the, I don't know, late 70s or early 80s, whenever it was, he moved to Shepherd's Bush. He ended up supporting QPR. So he brought me and my brother up as QPR fans.
Mm.
So when my agent said, oh, you've got to move to, you should move to London.
Yeah.
I didn't really know it. I thought, oh, I'll just move to, if I move to Shepherd's Bush, I could, it was when I drank a lot and a lot of my decisions were, this is so mental, were based on booze, right? How could you not realise at the time that maybe you need to think about your lifestyle? Is I'd go, yeah, if I move to Shepherd's Bush, that would mean that I could still wake up after 2 p.m. and I'd still be able to make the game. That's fucking what? Someone have a word with him? He's deciding where he's going to move based on like how late he can wake up. So what? That is nuts. So anyway, but because of that decision, that just random decision, I now live in this, beautiful area. There's the Thames is there. I walk to Hyde Park. I love parks. Mm. What happens to you in life? Regent's Park.
Regent's Park.
God.
If you're picking any park,
Regent's Park.
Regent's Park's better than Hyde Park.
And a canal that goes through Regent's Park. Canals.
Do you want to hear a story? So
yes.
I was walking from Regent's Park to Maida Vale. And,
Maida Vale!
Yeah. And do you know, well, listen to this. This will blow your mind. On the Saturday, Paul Weller went, hey, mate, I love your show, to me.
That's so cool.
And I was like, oh, thanks very much. And then kind of warned about the next day, Paul McCartney.
Oh, hey, fuck off.
Hey, mate, I love your show. And now, every time I've been
the
back...
The next day, Tom DeLonge.
No, this is it. But I've like, it was like 2 days of absolute madness and nothing since. My friend Geraint took mushrooms at when he was at university and he opened the fridge and he saw the face of God. If there's a sadder person opening a fridge than my mate Geraint, I've not seen it. Because he's seen God, and now every time he opens, it's just cheese. And that's the same with me. When I get to Maida Vale, and there isn't, like, a rock god, is Gene Simmons here? No, well, fuck this place.
That's amazing.
What is next?
Right, driving.
Is this the final one?
This is the final
okay,
one.
Okay, exciting.
This is the final.
They've been excellent, by the way.
Oh, bless you.
And you was, for the benefit of the people listening at home, Sean was very nervous because he said beforehand, he went, I'm giving away a lot of myself. I'm just going to chat about things I like. Is that okay? But this is the whole point.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, so through this interview, basically we figure out that you get giddy as shit if there are things that you never thought you'd get. You seem to like those. So the very idea of having a blanket in a box as you watch the cinema, getting expensive Vine tomatoes from Waitrose.
Definitely.
But you strike me as somebody that gets giddy about the finer things or the finer experiences.
But I think also, and I just noticed this kind of thinking about the list myself, is that Bar QPR and Blink, so there's already a contradiction in it. But I realised through making this list that actually they're all quite peaceful.
Yeah. Well, that's put you in a good place.
They're quite tranquil. So my act is where all of that kind of... I try and put all of that energy and all of that frustration and comic exasperation and kind of pain, I suppose. Even if the pain is about small things, I always think it's funny to be in pain. To be honest, like the act is meant to be.
Was that quite? It's the Billy Connolly quote, isn't it? Whenever you're vulnerable, you're funny.
I want the act to be like Schadenfreude for the audience. I want them to come and watch me and laugh at me and go, God, thank God I'm not him. I think that's really funny, and what I liken that to is, and how I kind of imagine the act is, when you're at the airport and you see someone running late. It gets me every time when you see someone running for their plane. What fucking awful.
Explain yourself. What are you? I don't know what you're laughing at. I love the fact you're laughing, but I wish I could join in.
Sorry, but that's why we're different. But that's what's great about comedy.
But
I wouldn't be able to do. No, that's all I need to say for me. Okay. I will expand.
Yeah,
but for me, that's all I need to say. That's why.
Yeah.
Different comedians, different acts, different ways of seeing the world, ways of finding it funny. Someone running late for the plane, like we've all. At some point, kind of been, up against the clock when it comes to a play, right? And it's basically, like, the worst experience you can have as a human being without, like, dying.
Yes.
It's so awful. But it's not... But that day, when you see someone running late for the plane, the reason it's funny is because today, it's not you. It's not funny because, like... You're mean and you're glad that they're having a bad time. I always find it funny because I go, like, I know, brother. That's where I take the comedy.
And that's where I
put it on stage. I put it all there.
I
realised, so I've come a long way around, but I realised when I was putting this list together that actually I like to leave that all on stage and kind of put that there. That's like my own kind of version. The stage is like my own kind of, it's like a, anxiety box. That's where I put that.
Yeah.
And actually, in my life, I think people are sometimes, they're like, what? I thought you were going to be like screaming and all over the place. You go, no, that is happening in my head somewhere.
Yes.
But actually, I've been through enough in my fucking life of my own, of like noise and things going wrong. And it just it being a struggle that actually I like the cinema, sit down, blanket, watch the film. I like walking down Portobello Road.
Mm.
I like going to Top Secret. That calming feeling that I get when I go down the stairs at Top Secret, the act's already on, you hear that laughter. That calms us. That might make other people that don't do comedy nervous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, oh, they're laughing. Like, I can calm. I like being relaxed in all of these situations. So the last one is, which I'm new to, is driving.
Oh, have you only started driving?
I've been driving about a year.
What's your whip, if you don't mind me asking?
Does that mean car?
Yeah.
Oh. I share. I couldn't be bothered to, like, if I were to go buy a car, you'd have to fill out a form, I assume.
I would have thought so.
Yeah, I couldn't be bothered to do that, so I just share my missus' car.
Oh, nice.
It's just like a Suzuki. It's such a piece of shit, this car. It's
manual, automatic?
Oh, no, I learned automatic.
Yeah.
I'm not totally.
Yeah.
People are really disappointed in that when you tell them.
Oh, no.
No, they are, but they generally, if you go, I learned automatic, you get this like, so,
But why?
What? I know what?
Yeah, it's easier.
It's easier. I don't need any more challenges.
Do you know, I hadn't driven a manual gear stick for, I think, 4 years, and I bought my wife a car for Christmas about 5 years ago, and I was driving this gear stick manual back home to her parents' house because I, you know, it was a present I was going to give her on Christmas Day. Crashed into the back of a van.
Oh,
I hadn't, no! I hadn't, and then had to be, you know, I wrote the car off.
Oh,
and then,
God!
And then
Happy Christmas.
I had to ring her up and say, look, I did get you a car, but it's in the back of a van. And it was on the just before you get onto the M4 going from Chiswick.
Right. And I'm yes, I know.
Kind of well known, and it's like Christmas Eve, and everyone's like, and all this. And it's much easier automatic.
Yes, exactly.
I was exasperated.
This is how much of a piece of shit this car is. It's not got like the. Is it the Apple Car? You know, you've got the screen and your phone connects to the screen.
Yeah.
CarPlay.
Yeah.
CarPlay?
I think so, yeah.
You know, like you get in and your phone connects and there's Google Maps and there's your messages.
Yes.
It doesn't have that. We've still got the bloody thing that you have to put into the lighter.
Oh, like, wow.
Yeah, the lighter thing to connect to the frequency to the radio.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, but that's me complaining about the experience of the car.
Yes.
But once you get going, when you've been doing this as long as I have, sitting on fucking trains, and then finally you get in a car, and it's just, it's like a portable bedroom.
And you're,
it's amazing.
That's how they should sell them. Cars, they're like portable bedrooms.
Totally.
Yeah.
Because I'm lucky because I'm new to it, so I'm still wowed by the whole experience. I love driving, even in a traffic jam. Don't give a shit. Podcast. This is the world can't get me. In this car.
Oh, Jesus.
I am safe.
That is deep.
That is where we are. That is where we are.
What I love most about driving, it's that thing of like post-gig where you've got that lovely bimbling hour. An hour drive, I think, is perfect after a gig.
Oh, because it is.
Your brain just sort of whittles along and you sort of connect these problems in your head because you're just doing this thing on automatic and then your brain's just...
Oh, it's lovely. Sometimes no music, sometimes music, podcast, audiobooks.
Yeah, phenomenal.
We are very lucky.
What's
people.
Your audiobook of choice at the minute?
Well, actually, podcasts, I listen to The Rest is History.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking good.
What's that?
Just catching up on all the shit that happened.
Oh, we see. That's what they should have called it. Yeah.
Yes. What I like about history is, because I try not to pay
just
attention
loads
about the.
Yeah.
There's loads of it. But what. If because the news is bleak, right?
Yes.
But. The news is daily and constant. And actually, yeah, in this, you know, the time we live in now, it's constant. It's breaking news. It's 24 hour.
Yes.
Right? But you're not going to need all of that information every day, all of this news. Some of it's just, one is that, you know, people go, it's a slow news day.
Mm.
So there's a terrible story that you don't really need to know about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? History is the news that made it.
Yes.
So you could just ignore the news. Don't worry about the news. Wait until the end. Wait until that's history, and then they'll go, this was one of the good bits.
There's a really,
and you just get to know the bits of the news that you needed to know.
It's news match of the day.
Precisely.
That's right.
That's it. There you go.
Let's see what Hitler did.
That's exactly it. That's what I said. So don't worry about the news. You don't need the news. Wait for a bit, you'll get the best bits of the news. You'll get the highlights of the news. That's what the history is.
Yeah.
So I'm very much enjoying history at the moment, learning all the old shit. Don't fuck it. I can see you're about to ask me a question. I don't know.
No,
it doesn't stick. I listen to it. Okay. It doesn't stick.
I like the idea, though. There's another brilliant podcast called Analysis. It's like a Radio 4.
Okay.
That sort of tries to take a long look at the news. There's a... What's the newspaper that you look at, Dan? That does that thing you were telling us about it.
Delayed gratification. But so this is the same as yours. So this is the news 3 months after the news has happened.
That's great.
Yeah. Four times a year.
There you go.
Everything happens on the same frequency. So, you know, the war in Ukraine, the war in the Middle East, Kim Kardashian, the Liverpool result. Everything is at the same frequency and it's hitting you like that. And I think what we need is a bit of help to kind of go, right, you don't need any of this stuff. These are the interesting yes. things. These are important things.
But that's what time does, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what time.
So what's your perfect drive?
Well, actually, do you know what? I think what you said about an hour, just such a nice amount of time. And on the sat-nav, or I'll tell you what's a nice feeling. When you're driving and it is over an hour, but on the sat nav, it drops under that hour into 59, yeah, and you're like, I'm into double
hello,
digits.
Hello.
Now I'm basically home.
Yes,
that's a wonderful feeling.
Have you found a favourite service station yet?
We know, right? What should we go after three? So I think I pronounce it wrong, but we'll give it a go after three. Yeah.
One, two, three. Beaconsfield.
Boom.
There you go.
I went to the. I'm sure it's Beaconsfield.
Yeah.
The Starbucks, I went to get a coffee. The Starbucks, I thought, it was pretty unusual for it to be empty. I thought, God, that's not like my luck. It's fucking empty. I'm just going to get to go straight to the front of the counter. Hi, yeah, can I get a black Americano, please? Sorry, we're out of hot water. Would you like anything else? What, Starbucks?
Okay, oh, Jesus.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Oh, my God.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll just have... I'll have that broom, please, that you're cleaning with. That would be fantastic. What do you mean? Why are you still open? If Starbucks has run out of hot water, you are closed. Shut the fucking shop. Don't you think? What?
I do. I just love... But I'm just... I was seeing what it felt like to be the man or woman behind this tirade, because I could just see you again. Just,
I wanted to talk about onions.
I can see, there's clearly a switch that flicks in you. But it's really interesting seeing it, isn't it? When you kind of go, oh, we've run out of hot water. But it's like that bit in Inception when everything just moves. Where it's like time stops and there's just a minute of you like this, that.
That's exactly it. Do you know what it is? It's because I'm trying to live a calm... And that is shown in the Wonder Box.
Yeah.
I'm trying to live a calm, tranquil life. I don't want any trouble.
If he shouted from the roof.
Yeah, yeah. But presumably, if you're in a Starbucks going, I'm trying to live a calm life, I don't want any trouble. I mean, there is clear evidence that you've had enough caffeine. Like, you know what I mean? I want any fucking trouble. Well, maybe have a frappuccino.
That's it. I tried to,
have you ever had an iced coffee?
In the summer. I love an iced coffee in the summer.
Well, then just have one of those.
It was late at night. Stop trying to stand up for this. This was absolutely
You're
ridiculous.
You're having a coffee late at night. You won't sleep.
I don't know.
About it. Come on, mate.
Who are you? Stacey Solomon. What's going on here?
Perfect. What a way of ending it. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the perfect way of ending the podcast. It was brilliant. Ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful Sean Walsh. So there you go, that was Sean. That was absolutely brilliant. What's he up to? He's got a tour show called Back From The Bed. He's doing loads of gigs all over the country. Find out more about it on his website, which is www.seanwalsh.com. That's Sean with two N's. We now know why. Go along, he's brilliant. Join me next week for more Wonderbox.